I'm Scott Linden. Welcome to our Upland Nation podcast. Hope you're having a good day, evening, whenever you're listening. Hope you're still reflecting on an incredible season, unless you're in Texas and you're still going. The afterglow of a good hunting season lasts, hopefully, until the next season. That's my hope, at least. We're going to talk about all sorts of things along those lines. If you didn't shoot as well as you thought you should, we're going to focus on that with an expert. He's the chief instructor for the National Sporting Clays Association, but also a bird hunting guide and avid hunter. So it's all in the same bailiwick. We should learn a lot from Don Curry very soon. In the meanwhile, we'll cover your weekend and mine. Take a look at the poll on your off-season plans. Our Handle It segment. I'll make public once again another of my New Year's resolutions that might be of help to you as well. And our This Land Is Your Land public access segment, I'm going to outline some new programs and a few spots, in generalities in spots in Nebraska. If you're looking for new birds and new places, I've got something for you there. Just had a great evening with my hunting buddy, Ben. Yeah, thank you, Ben, for the ammunition. Anybody else, feel free to send me 20-gauge target ammo in any quantity. That's one of the resolutions I mentioned earlier. We were comparing notes, particularly in the, chukar hunting world. We are both avid at that bird in particular, and some of the commonalities we ran into together and separately over the season that you might have experienced as well. And maybe it wasn't chuckers for you, but it was something else. But have you thought about the things that maybe jumped out at you as being different or consistent this year? With me, it was, we had no precipitation per se, a little bit here, a little bit there. So it was very dry, which meant birds were eating seeds, and particularly cheatgrass seeds, a lot. Very seldom did we find anything else in their crop. And when we did, it was cheatgrass shoots that had sprung up when they did get some precipitation. We found, both of us, that feed and access to it and proximity to it is probably the number one rule the last couple seasons. And then we celebrated his younger dog, Bernie, kind of grew up with my dog, Flick. They're about the same age. They've hunted together and kind of like brother and sister. Bernie kind of got it all together thanks to lots of bird contacts, and there's a lesson in that. And it's funny because that is often the question I get on Facebook in particular, but in other places as well. My dog is just not getting it together, and usually it's because they're not getting near as many bird contacts as they could. Okay, well, anyway, that's how it's been going around here. How about your weekend? Well, we're done with hunting, unless, like I said, we're in Texas. So, what are we doing on our Monday morning debriefs? I'm asking some slightly more philosophical questions, based on what I know about you folks and you folks know about yourselves. I do that survey every year, and then I do another one every week in the in the Upland Nation Insights newsletter. What most of us hunt for is not birds, not tailgate pictures. It's to watch the dogs work. So I asked you recently to show me pictures and tell me more about what you did that weekend in that arena. Arlie Barker shows off a couple great photos of birds on the wing in the snow with her dog in the foreground and background. Beautiful shots, great color. Kind of hard to say, but I think it's a Springer. It might be, let's see, it might be a setter. I can't tell from there. Anyway, beautiful dog. Mark David sends a photo of his old poodle pointer with a lot of frost on the bottom end of that dog. Yeah, that's probably a fun time. Jason Richards, your dog is learning all about Hungarian partridge, it looks like there. Keep up the good work. Good dog. Nick Spurlock says, Ruger took his humans for a hike. It looks like in some of that kind of slick rock country in Utah. And then they went on to a NAVDA training. What a great day that must have been. Darren Timberlake shows me his young dog with a dashing looking sweater on the tailgate with a dead pheasant. Hephzibah was introduced to the world of bird hunting. She accidentally flushed a rooster, and at 5 months, whoo, the training is underway. Oh, all sorts of great stuff. David Katowski on public land in Colorado. I think we talked about that one. And then, okay, let's end with this one. Jack Gable sends us a video here. Let's see what happens. He's trying to get down to his dog who's way down in that canyon. And the dog is young, but has pinned a covey. It took him 10 minutes to get there. There he goes, and there's the birds up and out of range. But he shot into the air to train steadiness, and it looks like a happy ending for everybody. Keep up the good work, you guys and gals, and share your stuff. Got a new question for you coming up real soon, every Monday on Facebook, on all of our Facebook pages. So share your stuff, especially the... the stuff that doesn't involve a pile of dead birds or a tailgate. Exercise a little bit more creativity in your shot selection. Curate your art a little bit in that regard, and I would appreciate it. And so would everybody else, because seldom is it really about getting protein, is it? All right, just about ready for Don Curry with the Sporting Clays Association. We're going to talk shooting, and particularly shooting for hunters. But first, this part of the Upland Nation podcast is brought to you by Sage and Breaker Gun Care Products. They're crafted at the highest caliber. That's why I use them. And if anything could help my shooting, I would use it. And that stuff does. From cleaning products to gear to help take care of your guns, learn more at sageandbreaker.com. Always free shipping, gift cards. Get on the mailing list and you'll have first shot, pardon the pun, and all the new stuff when it comes out. Yeah, before anybody else. Sageandbreaker.com. Yeah, that's more better. Yeah, welcome back. I told you we're going to take a shooting lesson, and here we are. Don Curry's on the other end of the line. Don is the principal at the Academy of Wing and Clay Shooting. He's the chief instructor for the National Sporting Clays Association. He's an instructor, coach, gun fitter, author of Mastering Sporting Clays, the book, and his instructional DVD is called Focus, Movement, Faith. Intriguing title. Number one rated Sporting Clays DVD on Amazon.com. Don Curry, welcome to the Upland Nation podcast.
Thank you, Scott. Very glad to be here.
Okay, so before we were so rudely interrupted, I had some really important questions for you before we get into the meat of the matter. Number one, over and under versus side by side.
Oh boy, that's a really loaded question. You know, for
pardon a pun.
for sporting clays competition, you know, over and under is the way to go. Although we do have some side events for side by side shotgun, which I love to shoot both of them, honestly. I think for a side-by-side, when you hold a side-by-side, you're really holding a piece of history because the side-by-sides were really the genesis of the modern-day shotgun, and then over and unders were developed thereafter. But I shoot both. I love both, and I think it depends on your perspective and what discipline you're shooting. But I love both side by side and over and under.
Okay, next critical question before we go on: flusher versus pointer.
Oh, I would again say both, because in my experience of upland bird hunting, and I ran the Gilchrist Club, which is a small private high end club up northwest Florida, we had flushers and pointers. So, and I think when you're hunting with a flusher and one or two pointers, I think it's like watching an orchestra as opposed to just having an all-around dog. So I love the orchestration of the flusher and the pointers working together.
Well, as a music major, I can relate to that, and you're absolutely right. I love that analogy. I've never heard it before. So with your permission, I'm going to steal it.
Yeah, I'm at it.
All right. Okay.
But for full disclosure, though, I have a pointer, and he is not a flusher. He's a pointer and a retriever. He's a Vizsla, and I trained him at the aforementioned club, and he's just a great dog. He's 8 now, and just love to hunt over him.
Oh, and I don't blame you one bit. I love the versatile breeds myself, and anybody who listens here knows mine usually have beards and eyebrows. But you know, on page 99 in the Cabela's catalog, you can buy a set of those for your Vizsla, and then he'd be a really good looking dog.
I suppose so.
Okay, so I want to get back to this because this is the constant debate, and I go back and forth, and I shoot both as well. But why is the over and under the gun of choice for competitive shotgunners? What is the difference, and why do you think they think it's better?
Right. So, and really, the over and under, the genesis of the over and under really was for bird hunting. But the idea, I think, is that you have a much narrower sight plane over which you're going to be seeing your birds or your targets. So for driven bird, for example, you're typically looking through or, you know, on either side of the barrel to see your target coming at you. And so the side-by-side has, you know, a bit of a larger sight plane from laterally. So for birds that are flushing from underneath, might not be as easy to see that bird coming from underneath as it would be shooting it over and under.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. There are others who will argue that that broader sight plane helps you actually acquire targets, but I've never heard anybody say, except for the ones coming from below or something like that.
Right, right. I mean, honestly, I think that unless you have a target coming from below, shooting a side-by-side, shooting an over and under, I don't think a side-by-side is more difficult to shoot than an over and under, unless you're specifically talking about targets coming from underneath.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to the last critical question, and then we're going to have fun the rest of the time. Unless you're already having fun. That's okay.
I'm already having
fun. All right. How was your hunting season?
It was terrific this year. I actually visited Covey Rise in Louisiana just a couple of weeks ago, and we had two duck hunts and an upland bird hunt, specifically quail. So this year's been terrific.
And if you had to narrow it down, because you've done, that's a perfect example. I mean, in the same trip you got waterfowl and upland birds, but could you narrow it down to one kind of bird that you, I mean, if you had to narrow it down, what would it be?
Oh boy. Well, I've done more quail hunting, and I've been around quail hunting and upland bird hunting, you know, whether it's pheasant or chucker or quail, than any other discipline, I guess you'd say. So that's really my love, and I believe that it's great to watch a dog retrieve and a duck hunt, but to me, there's nothing like, again, back to my term of the orchestra. I say at least 49% of the enjoyment of upland bird hunting is watching the dog work. And I don't think that there's a better discipline or a discipline that gives you a better opportunity to watch great dog work than upland bird hunting, and particularly, you know, quail, pheasant, chucker. I really love it.
Okay, you pass the test. We will carry on with the podcast. All right. So I'm intrigued because I'm the world's worst television shooter. and always trying to learn. And that's really the selfish reason I'm having you on the podcast. But your DVD, Focus, Movement, Faith, I'm intrigued by the title, and I want you to explain kind of your philosophy. Don't give us a lesson, because we'll be here all day, but tell us, you know, what are you trying to accomplish with a title like that and with the DVD itself?
Well, first of all, I have to make a disclosure, as I did in the video and in my book, that the term Focus, Movement, Faith did not come out of my head. Ah. It came out of it came from a guy named Bill Kempfer, who at one point owned Deep River Sporting Clays and in Sanford, North Carolina, and he was really in the early days of me becoming an instructor. He was one of my mentors and remains a good friend. I talk to him regularly, and he gave me permission to use Focus, Movement, Faith first in the DVD and then later in the book, and actually was first in a series of articles. But to answer the question directly, I just thought, you know, the way to shoot a shotgun well hasn't changed in 150 years. But I think what has changed and what you see every once in a while is an innovative way to get someone to shoot a shotgun well. And I have never heard before nor since a better phrase to encapsulate how to shoot a shotgun well than Focus, Movement, Faith. And the idea is you focus exclusively on the bird. You have good smooth movement, letting the eyes lead the hands and the gun to the target. And then the faith piece is really believing at your core that if you just focus on the target and point at the target with your front hand and the gun, the target will drop. So in a nutshell, that's Focus, Movement, Faith.
I love it. I'm studying, long story short, I'm using a similar attitude. The guy I've worked with in the past tells me to shoot like a predator, and it's an instinctive style, but the same basic idea. And it is all about having that confidence, whether you're shooting a basket or you're swinging at a baseball or anything else. We're talking about sports psychology here, aren't we?
Yeah, well, for the secular listeners, you could call it eyes, movement, trust, right?
Yeah,
The same thing. Yep. But yeah, it really is, you know, trusting your eyes and the onboard computer, which is your brain, to move the hands and the gun where your eyes are focused.
Well, it works if we do it, but the real key to that, and maybe you can take me to school for just a moment. By the way, this is the Upland Nation podcast. That's Don Curry. He's the expert on shooting. I'm the grasshopper today, Scott Linden. how do we maintain that focus? There's so many things in our peripheral vision. There's somebody yelling at us. There's a dog on, whatever it is. You got any advice for us?
I think practice would be one. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole reason Sporting Clays was developed and clay target shooting was developed, it was really an off-season way to practice one's shotgun skills. So I think the more you can practice like you hunt, of applying intense acute focus on the target, not only when you first acquire it, but through what I call through shot execution or through the trigger pull. So you want that good sharp visual focus on the target through the trigger pull. And I always encourage students to not only focus, but focus small. So on a clay target, that becomes, you know, the back edge on a going away target, or the leading edge on a left to right or right to left crossing target. In upland bird, it would be the head. You can always see the head sticking up above the body as the bird's flying away from you. So focusing small on a piece of the target rather than the whole target really helps prevent your peripheral vision from coming into play. You really want that acute visual focus, as I said, on the target through the trigger pull, good visual follow through.
You know, back when I was really a student of all this stuff and deep into the sporting clays world, making a TV series about it, there were various exercises people would do with lights and lasers and, you know, in the garage, in the dark and things like that. Do you have students do any of those things as well?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. One, in terms of there's vision and then there's movement, right? So on the vision side of things, I use a little very simple device called a Marsden ball. And basically this is a ball that's about, it's a little smaller than a softball, and it's got little stickers all around it, different colored stickers, and each colored sticker has a number or a letter on it. And you just hang that from your ceiling in your house about eye level and swing that ball back and forth. It hangs on a string from your ceiling, and focusing, moving your acute focus from letter to number to letter to number as the ball is swinging left and right. It really helps you, I think, focus on moving targets, which is what we do in, whether it's upland bird hunting or any type of bird hunting or sporting clays. We're focusing hard on a moving target, which means our eyes have to move with that moving target in order to maintain focus. So that would be the visual side of things.
Wow, I love that.
And then it's called a Marsden ball, Marsden. And the other one that you alluded to was the laser. There are a couple of devices. There's a Laser Pro and an Ultimate Practice shooting system, which both the Marsden ball and that device I sell on my website at doncurry.com. But and basically the laser system helps you practice moving the gun, and you can do that indoors. And for your northerly listeners, it comes in real handy when you're shut in over those cold and snowy winters. To be able to practice your gun movement indoors by tracing that line of movement with the laser with your shotgun.
Do you give a quiz when the ball's going back and forth? Are you asking somebody, look at the B or look at the two, or does it matter, or should you just look at an item on that ball?
Yeah, I just look at it, allow your eyes to shift focus from one letter to a number to a letter to a number on the ball.
Yeah.
And that's quite an exercise. It really gets your, number one, it gets your, you know, saccadic eye movement working well side to side. And it also, reinforces that whole idea of focusing small versus focusing on the whole target.
I love that one. And by the way, just if you're interested in one of those items, doncurrie.com. Don Curry IE is the way to spell that .com for all that stuff and a whole bunch more. In fact, somewhere at the very top of one of your pages, where you say a gun fitter as well. How important is gun fit to a hunter?
Oh, it's really important. I mean, gun fitting and with shotguns is really important. Pistol shooting, rifle shooting, we're adjusting ourselves to the gun, right? To make sure that our eyes are aligned with the rib. But when we're shooting a shotgun, we're not really aiming. We're pointing. We're feeling the point with our front hand. We're pointing the shotgun to that object of our focus. And so some people can just grab a gun right off the shelf, and it fits just fine. So what does that mean when it fits just fine? Well, if you throw up the gun and the length is right and it's fairly comfortable, and the angle of the butt pad, which we call the pitch, is fairly comfortable, and your eye, as you fully mount the gun, your eye comes to rest aligned with the top edge of the barrel or the rib, allowing you good visual visibility of the target and ability to see the target over the gun, then you're in good shape. But a lot of times, for many people, they're not a standard fit.
Yeah.
So they may have a very high cheekbone, for instance. So ladies and kids who are still, you know, younger and haven't fully developed yet, their cheekbones or their zygomatic bone is a little closer to their eyeball. So what that means is when they mount the gun, their eye can potentially fall below the rib. So now they're shooting a gun that they can't really see the target over the rib. So now they end up either missing the target or they end up lifting their head, which causes them to shoot high. So gun fit's very important.
How about lead? You know, you talk about some aspects of the movement part of your three-part philosophy, but is lead something conscious in your method, or is it it just falls in if we're doing all the other things right?
Yeah, well, the Churchill said it best, and he first said it in 1925. He was the first guy to actually say that. Look, if you apply focus on the target, if you're focused exclusively on the target, and you initiate good movement to the target, the natural overthrow of the gun will establish the forward allowance required. So I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said. And within 30, 35 yards, I really think that's the answer to how to shoot a shotgun well, is exclusive focus on the target and allow the natural overthrow of the gun to establish the forward allowance.
It's no wonder we get along so well, Don Curry. This is exactly what I'm relearning all over again. Which reminds me, you got any 20-gauge target ammo you want to sell?
Oh, boy. What a challenge we're having these days.
Yeah, well, I've been lucky.
I have to confess I'm lucky, too. I don't know that I should say it on the radio, but what the heck? I actually, and it wasn't because I was smarter. The timing was right. I happen to have a fairly full garage of the 12 gauge that I need, and I've got a little bit enough for hunting for the next couple of years in the 20 and 28 also.
Nice. Well, you planned ahead, unlike some of us, but we're getting there. And thanks again, Ben and Mark Newell, both for sending some my way. Appreciate that. Now is probably a good time to take a little bit of a break. You're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. That's Don Curry, the chief instructor for the National Sporting Clays Association, also a gun fitter, author, DVD star, and all that other stuff. I hope you're learning something already. We got a lot more to come in that regard, and then also our Handle It segment coming up in just a moment or two. So, Don, stand by while I lecture everybody on my dog's nutrition.
Will do.
Yeah, right about now is when you're taking stock of your dog's health and how he did. You know, Flick loses about a pound a day when he's out hunting. Well, that's what happens when you run 20, 25 miles, I guess. So I'm trying to replenish the stock anytime I can. During the season, it's harder unless you're using something really, really good to refuel him. That's why I feed Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food. Learn more about all of his formulations at drtims.com. Yes, just like the other guys, he'll deliver it right to your door, not personally. He has somebody who does that for him. And Dr. Tim supports the hunting community, unlike some of those other delivery services. If you'd like to learn more, go to drtims.com. Take a look at the Momentum formulation. That's the one Flicky gets twice a day, except during hunting days. Take a look at the guaranteed analysis, figure out more about the quality and the origin of the ingredients, particularly the importance of various protein sources. Hey, the guy knows what he's talking about. He's a sled dog racer. Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food has won the Iditarod a number of times. 30% discount on your first order. Use the code UPLANDNATION and tell him I sent you. And once you've bought your dog food, stay on the World Wide Web and buy some new to you, gently used gear. Go to UplandNationDeals.com, where somebody else has something on the site that you want, or vice versa, if you want to sell some of your used gear. I like to say it's pro-level gear at entry-level prices. It's a swap. Basically, we facilitate it for you. We're particularly looking at e-collars and hunting vests as some of the hotter categories. You want to buy one, you want to sell one. Nicely broken in, but still taken well taken care of. It's all at uplandnationdeals.com. Yeah, it's like I said, it's time to kind of look at next season already, counting down. What is it, about 8 months, maybe 7.5, depending on where you live. In our Handle It segment this week, sponsored by HappyJackInc.com, dog care remedies of all sorts. Welcome back, Exum family, just renewed for another sponsorship. So I'm making all these resolutions. You've heard about some of them. One of the others I'm doing is remembering that, you know, gosh dang it, the season starts out so well for both of us. And then as it goes on, my shooting gets worse and Flick's handling gets a little bit hinky as well. He is not as steady. He's not paying as close attention. All the things that were really good at the start of the season just kind of get left by the wayside. So I am doing this. I'm resolving to use my pigeons during the season as well. So whenever we're not hunting, we're going to be working on real birds out there behind the place. That way our standards in the field won't wear out as much as our boot soles do. If that's a decent suggestion for you as well, even basic stuff like retrieving and obedience. Steadiness in particular, you need the birds, but for everything else, it's just a matter of taking a little time during the week and devoting it to your dog's skills and talents. Keep them polished up just like you would your hot rod. All right, Don Curry, welcome back to the Upland Nation podcast. How you doing?
Thanks, Scott. Really good.
Oh, good. And glad to hear that. So I'm doing okay?
You're doing great.
Oh, you had to think about that for a minute. I'm going to have to do better, I think. Don, as everybody heard, is the chief instructor for the National Sporting Clays Association. Great organization, second generation leadership there. You've probably been around long enough to remember senior versus junior. Love the group. Love the concept. I remember the earliest days of the sport when it was still called Hunter's Clays. But, you know, here's the gripe, and I'm guilty of it as well. There are so many weird target presentations on a challenging sporting clays course that we're never going to see in the field. So first off, give us permission to just avoid those stations. Can we just do that?
Absolutely. So, you know, it's interesting. When I start a lesson, I always want to understand what discipline that the shooter is interested in. So if I have a student that's purely a bird hunter, however, they shoot sporting clays in order to get better at bird hunting. In other words, that's their focus. That's their shooting focus is bird hunting. Then we're not going to go on the, we're not going to go to the station with the curling targets and the transitioning targets because birds just don't do that. We're going to try to go to stations that mimic the species that they shoot. And that just makes sense. And it really just depends on what your goals are and what your shooting discipline might be. And none of that's wrong. It just is what, you know, it just is what it is. It's, if you're primarily a bird hunter and shoot clays for practice, then you can absolutely bypass those, the station with the curling targets, transitioning targets, the rabbits, for example, that roll in the ground. You're probably not going to shoot that as an upland bird hunter, right? You probably end up shooting a dog, which you don't want to do.
Yeah,
if you're shooting targets on the ground. So
kids and lazy shooters, don't try that at home.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, good. All right, I feel better already. And you know, we can pick and choose. We all know what those birds are going to do, so we can find those stations and we can seek them out and practice on them.
Exactly.
When we're practicing, when you're helping somebody practice, when you're giving a lesson, What are the biggest problems, I guess, to be, you know, to be politically incorrect? What are the biggest problems these people bring to their lesson?
Well, I think the it depends on the shooter's level, right? But if they're primarily a hunter and they want to get better at upland game hunting, for example, you know, most of the time that type of shooter is shooting maybe, you know, half a dozen times a year, and if they really don't shoot that much, then they're really not trained themselves to focus on the target. A lot of times they're aiming. So the biggest problem I see for beginning shooters is aiming instead of focusing and pointing. And you know, one thing I almost said in the last in answer to your last question is you know, in terms of practice, there's nothing better, in my opinion, for practicing upland game hunting than a wobble trap. And for your listeners who might not know what a wobble trap is, it basically oscillates left and right as well as up and down. So in an arc of about, let's say, 45 degrees out in front of you. So when I was managing a club and was training almost exclusively bird hunters, you know, warming up prior to a morning hunt by putting one hunter on the left side of the wobble trap and another hunter on the right side of the wobble trap is really fantastic practice, because number one, you don't know where the bird is coming from, the target's coming from, which mimics upland bird hunting. But also it gets each hunter sort of conditioned to their sector of fire. So it's a safety thing as well. So I don't know if I got off track or answered your question.
No, you did. In fact, it's interesting because of the moment you said aiming, I'm thinking, well, how does an instructor figure that out? And I guess that's a legitimate question, because you're not standing in front of these people. Nobody's crazy enough to do that. So do you ask them, or is there some giveaway or what?
Well, there is a giveaway. And when so I teach the all different levels of instructor courses as well. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we teach at all the levels is how to read the shooter's eyes by reading the muzzle.
Yeah.
So, yes, you're right. I mean, as an instructor, you can't stand out front. That wouldn't be very safe. So we have to learn to figure out what the student's eyes are doing, or the shooter's eyes are doing, by reading the muzzle. And so what typically happens when a shooter is moving to a target is they're looking at the target, the front of their gun is moving, you know, trying to move with the target. And then right at the very end of the shot, just before they pull off the shot, if they're checking the barrel target relationship, that barrel will tend to stop or slow down. And there's usually a miss behind that will result. So it's very common to see, for someone who's an aimer, checking the muzzle just before they pull the trigger to make sure everything's lined up right, as we would in rifle shooting, mm-hmm. That muzzle typically stops or slows down, so it falls out of pace with the target.
Wow, I never thought about that, but it's got to be a deep-seated, I'll say, mental block, if you will, that causes that. Are they ever conscious of it? This is news to them, I'm sure.
Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. You know, shooters have a different level of awareness, mm-hmm. and usually that of self-awareness, and usually that self-awareness increases as you shoot more. But, you know, sometimes I'll ask them, so what part of the target were you looking at when you pulled the trigger? And if you hear something like, you know, that usually means they weren't.
who are you teaching me?
so or you could say, well, how much lead did you give that target? And if they fall into my trap, they'll say, maybe about that much. And, oh, okay, so you know exactly where the barrel is in relationship with the target, right?
That is a trick question. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, how about this time we just look at the target, and I want you to focus on that target through the trigger pull. So as you're pulling that trigger, I want you only to see the target and feel the point with that front hand.
Okay, so now we've got somebody, a different somebody, and here you are, Don Curry, instructor and hunter, and you're out at your former club, and you're effectively guiding some shooters, some gunners, and they make a different mistake in the field, shooting mistake, because they make all sorts of other mistakes, I'm sure. You've seen me. So what would it be in the field that would differ from the aiming thing? Is it
that's a really good question. So I would say that, again, if you say, okay, well, what are the top two, you know, biggest mistakes that we see with like an upland bird hunter? Well, one would be first would be aiming, which we've talked about. The second would be their gun handling or their movement. So getting back to the focus, movement, faith. So you're catching on here?
Yeah, yeah.
So the movement, you'll see a couple of different things, but and you ever notice that you miss more birds at the very beginning of the hunt, but then you sort of get into a groove? And I think the main reason for that is we rush our mounts in a field environment.
Yeah.
We just are so afraid of that bird getting away that we rush them out. And when you rush, when you acquire a bird and then now you've got a lock on it visually, and then you quickly mount the gun to the cheek, you've basically lost everything. You've disconnected from the bird, and now you have to find the bird again from behind the gun. So what's the correction for that? The correction for that is leading with that front hand. A lot of hunters will lead with the back hand, meaning that you'll get a barrel wobble. So the butt of the gun will go to the shoulder first, and then the front of the gun will come up. So it's sort of like a seesaw. Whereas if you lead with that front hand, it will really smooth out the gun. It won't distract the eyes and pull the eyes to the front of the gun. It'll allow the eyes to stay on the target. So focus on the target and lead with the front hand. Those are the two biggest, I guess, pieces of advice I'd give an upland bird hunter.
Well, thank you for reinforcing the things I'm working on right now. In what position is that lead hand? I mean, are you actually literally putting your index finger down there and pointing at the bird, or does it really matter?
I encourage students to and shooters to put their index finger in a position that's parallel with the barrels.
Yeah.
Is it underneath the forearm? Is it on the side of the forearm? It really doesn't matter. Whatever's comfortable for the shooter's wrist.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important subconsciously to have that front index finger or the index finger down the forearm parallel with the barrels, because it reinforces the idea in our subconscious that we are pointing the shotgun. We're not aiming it, we're pointing it.
Great idea, and I'm a big believer. Yeah, that death grip on the forearm is probably the kiss, you know, probably the number one indicator of somebody probably not using one of these methods that are all related that we're talking about.
Yeah, and that over gripping is another issue. So, you know, again, leading. I always say when somebody says, "Well, how tight should I hold it?" Okay, if you think about a medium handshake, you know, it's somewhere between the death grip and the limp wrist, right? So it's a firm hold, but it's a secure hold. But if you over grip, that's also going to exacerbate that problem of too much backhand in your movement. Okay, because you've got more to grip with the backhand, so you're going to tend to overemphasize that backhand instead of emphasizing the front hand and the point.
Great. Tell me, beyond the things we've talked about, is there anything that we should never, ever do in the field with our guns or with our shooting?
Well, from a safety standpoint, there's a lot.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that, you know, I've never had it happen to me. I've never been on a hunt where it's happened. But, you know, one of the biggest tragedies you can have happen is someone gets shot, of course, but to shoot a dog. And dogs are, vulnerable out front. So you've got to be very conscious of where your gun is, where the dogs are. And I find that's the biggest learning curve for new upland bird hunters is they need to have a much more heightened sense of awareness than we normally would, you know, going crossing the street or walking in a shopping center, right? We really need to understand where the guide is, where the dog is, dogs are, if you have more than one, where the other hunter is, and where their sectors of fire is. So one of the things that can really help keep the dog safe is to never let the gun barrel go below parallel to the ground.
Yeah.
So if the gun is parallel or higher to the ground or higher, you're never going to shoot a dog unless that dog's doing something that it shouldn't do.
Not that that would merit shooting him anyway, but
no,
yeah, no, but I get your point.
And meaning jumping up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if the dog's jumping up, that would be a problem.
So when we're walking around in the field, people ask me, Scott, your gun's always open when you're walking around out there. How are you ever going to get a shot? Well, you know, dog gets birdie, dog goes on point, then you close the gun and you walk in on it. But do you like people to carry a gun in a particular way?
You know, whether they, by the way, I'm with you. I usually walk around with my gun open and yeah, the dog gets birdie or the dog gets on point. There's also a question about the safety on the gun.
Yeah.
A lot of people say, well, you know, you only take the safety off just, you know, as you've mounted the gun and you're just getting ready to pull the trigger, then you take the safety off. Well, I don't insist on that actually. What I tell shooters is, look, if the dog's on point, we're getting you all lined up and we haven't yet sent in the flusher and you've got the gun loaded, closed up, and your feet are not moving, I'm absolutely fine with you taking the safety off at that point. I don't know if I got off track or I answered the question.
No, that's great. And I do want to talk for a moment or two because I, like so many clubs, and I think I think it started in Florida. The pointing breeds and then Cocker Spaniels as a partner dog for flushing make all sorts of sense for a bunch of reasons. But I think in large part, what I wonder about is where are you putting hunters in relation to the pointers and where you think the bird is before you send in that flusher?
Yeah, so I think it's if you're hunting on your own or hunting with a guide, I think the biggest thing you want to do is create a line.
Yeah.
So as a guide, I would always, when the pointer is on point, I'm always thinking about, okay, where's the line going to be? And by the line, I mean that line sort of goes the center of it should be right off the dog's nose. You know, just a little bit in front of where the dog is. And then you've got to create that line by establishing where your hunters are on either side, assuming you're hunting with two hunters. So you want to create that line from the hunter on the left through that point in front of the dog to the hunter on the right. And always creating that line. And typically it's off, like I said, it's off the dog's nose. You're trying to line up where you think the direction of the dog's focus is. And then the flusher really is at the heel of the should be heeled to the guide or to the hunter, and then released to move into where the pointer is indicating.
Let's close on this question. DonCurry.com, CURRIE.com is where you learn more about Don, his philosophy, the stuff he's got, the way he does business. All of that at DonCurry.com. You're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden. Don, you're an instructor. You're an expert. You've been around the block more than once. What have you learned in the last few months that we should also learn now?
Wow. I think what I've learned in the last few months really has more to do with training instructors than anything else. I think that you know, the number one thing that an instructor needs to do, and I think this is somewhat transferable to a shooter, is that every shooter is different, and the combination of the eyes, optic nerve, brain, and the shooter's hand-eye coordination, everyone is a little different. So, and everyone processes visual imagery a little differently. So, you know, you as a shooter, you may not be the same. You may not feel like you shoot as well as another shooter. Well, you just may process visual imagery a little bit differently. And putting in a shameless plug, I think one of the best things a shooter can do that's not shooting up to what they feel is their potential is get a lesson. Go out there and get a lesson. Because a trained instructor will see something that you really can't see in yourself. And the good ones will pick it up pretty quickly. And, you know, in a period of an hour or so, you'll increase your bird count when the next season rolls around.
Man, I'm a believer. I really am. That's Don Curry. I'm Scott Linden. This is the Upland Nation podcast. Don, learned a heck of a lot. Thank you so much for sharing some of your wisdom with us and for being a part of the Upland Nation.
Oh, it's been a thrill, Scott. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Yeah, stick around. We got a whole lot more to talk about. We're going to talk about what you're thinking about doing with the season closed. We've got the public access segment, This Land Is Your Land, among other things. But let's start with that. Are you getting the Upland Nation Insights newsletter? If you aren't, just sign up at findbirdhuntingspots.com. You'll get on it there and also be entered to win all sorts of cool stuff. But it is our chance to learn more about each other and what we're doing, and I am fascinated with all the things you share with me. Thank you. If you take that survey, I do appreciate it. So, with the season closed, what is your free time priority? Well, you kind of know what mine are, but what are yours? Highest on the list, more dog training. 33% of you say that's your highest priority. Second, kind of a wash. Practice shooting and getting in better shape. We can do all three of those by simply dog training, I think. 16.5% of you each said that. 10% of you want to find new spots to hunt next season. And then about 9% of you so far are saying, maybe I ought to get to know my friends and family all over again. Well, that, you know, there's no reason you can't do all of those. And good luck at, well, each one of those things. Keep me posted on how it's going. Oh, the Upland Nation podcast brought to you in part by Gunner.com. Their kennels have been tested and proven to save actual dogs in actual accidents. Man, some of the pictures are a little scary. I've been on some of those. It's not pretty, but thank goodness those dogs were in a Gunner kennel. If your dog needs spoiling, and whose doesn't, they've got all sorts of accessories to add to that kennel and to your kennel, from feed bins to fans and everything in between. Be the first to know by getting early access to exclusive offers. Sign up at gunner.com. This Land Is Your Land, our public access segment, is brought to you by findbirdhuntingspots.com. New material every week to help you find new places to go. And, of course, advice on training and care for your dog, among other things. Findbirdhuntingspots.com. You know, I have been a lucky son of a gun over the years, traveling for fun and profit both. Nebraska is one of those states I wish I could spend more time in for a bunch of reasons. That's where the sharp tails are probably most prominent. But one of the other things that's important about Nebraska is it does have ringneck pheasants and a unique program to help, number one, help those birds flourish, and number two, help you find them. They got a kind of a creative way to do that. They're giving some farmers in some areas a little bit of an incentive to cut their wheat and their Milo a little higher and a little sloppier than most farmers would. It creates a tall stubble and a lot of feed. They call it the Open Fields and Water Program. It's not CRP, it's cultivated ground, but it's cultivated ground that's been prepared, if you will, for folks like you and me. Check it all out at outdoornebraska.gov and then search for the Public Access Atlas and find all of those spots. Believe me, you will be grateful to find that kind of stuff. I know I was. All right, let me remind you one more time. We could sure use your used equipment at UplandNationDeals.com. Whether you're upgrading your own and looking for ways to pay for it, or you're just thinking about going to the next level, period, buy your stuff there, sell your stuff there. Maybe you'll break even at some point. So learn more about how it all works at UplandNationDeals.com. Don Curry, thank you so much for being a part of the Upland Nation. DONCURRIE.com is where you go for more information on shooting, gun fitting, the whole Megillah. Thank you all for listening. If you like what you heard, please rate or review us, especially on Apple Podcasts. That's the one that really counts. Appreciate that. Talk to me any day of the week at the Wing Shooting USA and Upland Nation Facebook pages. Thanks for your comments, Susan Davey. All the reviews and laudatory comments are greatly appreciated. Our quote this week comes from playwright and author George Bernard Shaw. He says, "I like a bit of a mongrel myself, whether it's a man or a dog. They're the best for every day." Yeah, I know what you mean, George. Ditto. Thank you again for listening. I hope you're spending that time with your family and your dog. I'm Scott Linden. I'll see you next week.